There are times when you look back at your life and things that you went through and all of the choices you made, and you just can't help but think, how did it all even happen the way it did? All the ways it could have gone wrong, all the ways it could have been different. How did it all come into being like that? And for me, looking back, I don't even know what I was thinking, is the time that I ran a failed internet service provider. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me in this and helping me get out of debt. One of the things that I discovered during the PBS documentary was that a lot of bulletin board system people, as well as the systems themselves, became internet service providers. They would expand the amount of lines that they had and then make it possible to connect to the internet at large, either through a bulletin board system that had internet awareness, or simply through straight-up internet connections that gave you the ability at home to telnet and later use the web out into the internet at large. Anybody who got into it in the 1990s usually did it one of a couple smart ways. Either they found a bulletin board system that was out there that had multiple lines and was doing pretty well for itself, and then helped them go to the next level, or they themselves had experience in engineering, business, and other related technology, and were able to use that knowledge to start a business. I was neither. I was a young, punk kid who was working at a video game company who thought it would be a really good idea to start up and be an internet service provider. Spoiler alert, it did not go well at all. But the adventures that I experienced during that time, well, those were precious, and I'll tell you a few of them. The internet service provider was named Cow.net, or Cows Technologies, COWZ. It was basically a cow-themed internet service provider. The idea was that there was kind of a cow theme throughout it that would distinguish me from other, more bland internet service providers. To my shock, later on, I discovered I wasn't the only cow-themed internet service provider out there, but I did have the cow.net domain, which I still have, and which, at least in some way, distinguished me. Also, the phone number for the ISP was 1-617-COWTOWN. You called that up for the dial-up connection, and that was memorable as well. At my beginning, and therefore at my peak, there were 8 incoming phone lines. The 8 incoming phone lines connected you to a black box, which was the name of the trademarked company, black box incoming dial system that would then telnet over to a number of, even at that time, aging Sun workstations that I had acquired from a number of companies and discard areas, and which allowed you to either use the modified Waffle BBS software that I had, or telnet out to the world at large, as well as using an on-system MUD that I kept for the users to be able to talk to each other as a conferencing system. I believe the price was $10 a month, and if you called up, and assuming everything worked great, you would get a pretty straightforward bulletin board system, which then had a number of commands that enabled you to interact with the internet at large. Or you could leave messages on the bulletin board system, or you could basically do whatever else you wanted to do. I had this idea of freedom and liberty and letting the users do whatever it was they wanted to do. Even by 1996, which is about the time that this all went on, I was already encountering problems with a number of companies trying to get downstream open access internet. That is to say, the ability to resell internet. Companies at that point decided that end users were what they wanted. They did not want to sell to resellers, and they just wouldn't make that available. But I did find one company that would. They were named Zensei, X-E-N-S-E-I, and their head, Jeff Morris, was willing to sell me 56K internet access, 56K of internet for about $300 to $400 a month. Now, you're hearing that correctly, 56K, a 56K modem that was always on through a leased line going to my computers and enabling multi-threaded communication through a number of hubs that was never going to be more than a modem. So I don't even know, if you look at this thing objectively, where I thought the next step of this was going to go. I mean, you could never really speed it up without costing a lot more than the 8 phone lines could handle. I don't know if I could have really even technologically gone above 8 phone lines considering my system without considerable investment. So I think it was doomed from the start. But here we were. The Cow.net system survived for about a year from inception to closure. And during that time, I was an actual functioning ISP that was able to have a small number of users and have a nice, pleasant group of folks who were, I mean, really interesting, and some of them are still lifelong friends, people who used the bulletin board system and the ISP at the time, and who thought it was something that could really be promoted. When I talk to people now about building a community or working on a project, one of the things I've always said is when you work on your bulletin board system or your website or your music project, there will be somebody, and just out of nowhere, who will seem to take as much interest and as much love of it as you do. Not in a controlling way, but just wanting to help day in, day out, to be a part of it. And that person you should absolutely nourish and grow and make them part of the project from a staff level, because they will really, really make themselves valuable in ways you didn't even understand. For me, that person was Dee Dreslock, who was the sister of a friend and was a writer and artist and was doing some really incredible things on her own, but she really took to this system and got involved in it and was keeping track of things with me through that period of time. She would send me letters in the mail that had dragons drawn on them, and she would always react online faster than sometimes I could with my day job. I mean, she was invaluable, and I really still appreciate 20 plus years later the things that Dee was doing for the system. Even though Cow's technology and Cow.net didn't last very long, it was a community. A community that was built on commodity, weird hardware, going out to the internet really slowly, but was dedicated to having its own interesting, weird character, and having a outlook that was fun. I mean, the website itself for Cow.net told you about Cow Internet Service Providing, and we had to promote it. And at the time, my girlfriend Dory and her friend Liz and her friend's boyfriend Rick and I all went out to a field in Northampton, Massachusetts, and I dressed up in a cow suit, and I went into a cow field with real cows, and we took terminals out to the cow field and recorded and photographed people typing at terminals next to actual cows. That this didn't end up in a massive disaster for us, I don't know how it didn't, but there are photos of me in a cow suit and friends with computers and real cows, and this became promotional material for Cow.net. It's still up there. And again, it was just this kind of fun whim. You know, we never got to the point with this whole business that things had to come down to hiring and firing. There was never any employee but me, and it didn't last long enough for any sort of backstabbing financial issues to rise up. It was just this weird, fun project. Now, what it was built on was hardware that, looking back, was insane. I was building everything on Sun servers. Now, if you know anything about Sun servers, most people know about them for the Spark Station series, either Sparks or Spark Stations or Spark servers. You know, that was the whole family of the late 90s, early 2000s for Sun. But what I was using were Sun 2s and Sun 3s. These were machines that were beautifully made and wonderfully engineered, but a ridiculous proposition even by 1996. The main Cow.net machine was a Sun 3/280. It's worth looking this up on the net if you haven't seen it. It was a square, probably 2.5 feet square every side, basically the size of a mini fridge. It had an enormous heat signature, and it ate incredible amperage. And the other machines were littler, but also did work at huge power consumption and incredible slowness. The whole thing was connected through something called ThickNet, which barely makes a mention nowadays. Most people know 10BASE-T, which is the small Ethernet cable that you usually see around. That's called 10BASE-T. But this was actually ThickNet, which was a large wire that had ports that clicked on and put spikes into the cable like a vampire. They were called vampire taps. And this system came to me whole cloth when I purchased the Suns from the X Consortium. The X Consortium is the nonprofit that was behind the X Windows system during a lot of its life. And they had purchased, used these Sun 3/280s for something like a few thousand dollars from, I was told, Citibank. Citibank had spent $25,000 on each of these servers, and they had sold them to the X Consortium for a few thousand, and I was now buying them from the X Consortium for about $500 apiece. I bought two of them, and I went to the office, and we put them into the back of my car, and I drove them away and drove them to the place where I was having my ISP host. Oh, I should probably talk about where I was hosting. Cow.net lived in an artist colony in South Boston called The Distillery. It was a distillery that had long ago been turned into a bunch of empty closed-off rooms, each of which had artists, quote-unquote, working there. Now, the thing was, they were not zoned for residential, but of course, artists are artists, so they were living there. In fact, when I looked into living there myself, the landlord explained to me how it would work, which was, you could live there if you wanted to, but every once in a while, the city would announce that they were going to inspect it to see if people were living there, and everyone would pitch in money to rent a moving van, put all of their furniture into the moving van that would represent somebody living there, like beds and pots and pans, and then it would be driven around the corner for when the inspection was happening. So it was all pretty weird and fun and sketchy to me at the time. The artists that I was technically a roommate with, we negotiated a pretty strange deal. They would put up drywall and give me a small office that would represent my ISP, and then I would give them internet service for free. I didn't have to pay rent. I would just have to pay for electricity. This is crazy that I negotiated this. So my roommates at the time, Tom and John, they had their own life going on, their own amazing things they would work on, and I was a guy who also had keys and would let himself in, go in there, reset a machine, and so on. And I had just learned to drive, so I could drive from where I lived in Cambridge down to South Boston to the distillery and let myself in late at night to reset a machine or make a phone work again, and then I would leave. I was at the distillery, you know, maybe a few times a week or less. I would always walk into some weird party or stuff going on. There wasn't a lock on the Cal.net office there. So I found out later that people from around the building would know how to get into that apartment, go into that little office, and there would be a terminal there, and they could use the internet for free. So I actually had many more customers than I thought because they were connecting in and going out to the internet at large on little V220 terminals, connecting them to email and other things they had. Again, everybody was living off this 56K connection into my room there, and it was going like that for a year. I had to pay electricity, and those amperages really added up. I was spending a few $100s on the electricity alone. Combine that with keeping up the internet service providing and the fact that I didn't have that many customers, and the place was doomed on a pure financial level. I don't think it was making enough to even break even. And after a while, I was finding I had no money at all. The video game company I was working for was suffering badly. We weren't getting any new jobs. We had done one or two small jobs and gotten paid, but we were quickly running out of money. So I wasn't actually getting a paycheck. And after a while, I was doing temp work during the day to pay for everything else I was doing. People started to have to lend me money. My girlfriend's parents gave me a few $1,000s. I had actually Dee give me some money. I had other people give me money, to the point that when the ISP finally went under, I probably owed people something in the range of about $10,000 or $12,000. So it was never, ever going to be that level of success. Looking back, though, at this abject failure, there are so many little points that I look at myself, and I'm proud of what I was. The fact that I negotiated this internet service at a time when that was becoming hard to do. The fact that I came up with this weird sweetheart deal that was great and terrible for both sides in terms of providing internet access to artists. The room that the ISP was in, this little office, it was my little world with its own weird custom furniture and all of these machines making noise. That was a world I put together. And I was so proud of it when I walked in. It would always be overheated. The modems were dying left and right. But it was mine. It was something I had put together. And it had all of these strange attributes. And it was another voice on the infinite spectrum of what the internet was becoming. I was so happy that this project existed from day to day. I was living a life where I would look at everything I was doing and say, "This is crazy." The ability to walk into a weird artist's colony that had all sorts of businesses up and down, everything from a yoga studio to pottery makers to folks who were doing raves and dances, all the way over to this strange group of artists who were working on electronic projects and music and everything else, and then to walk into my little room where I was running an internet service provider. What a strange, fun place to have been in my life. When I switched from working for the video game company to becoming a Unix administrator, my boss, Pat O'Malley, had given me a really sweetheart deal in terms of paying me as a consultant for the first month. And because I immediately was working 60 to 70 hour weeks, I ended up making multiple tens of thousands of dollars in 1 month. And I used that money to pay off everybody I owed money to. As I've mentioned before, this was one of my first major debts I had to deal with, and the fact that we were able to go from the despairing low of owing people money for this failed provider up to paying it off in such a short time definitely saved me. And when I saw other people in situations, I leaped towards them because I remember how terrible I felt about all this borrowed, lost money. You know, being able to walk up to Bill and Linda and Dee and others and just give them their money back, that was the greatest weight off my shoulders. And when that phase ended, the fact that I was able to end it not owing anybody anything, just great. At the end of the ISP. As I moved things out of that office and I took all of these servers and put them in my new apartment in Medford, Massachusetts, where I had moved to, I wanted to sell off the Sun 3s because people still wanted them. And I put them up on eBay and I set the minimum for $1. And somebody bought them at $1 a piece. He actually was willing to drive up from New Jersey to Boston to pick up these two Sun 3s. Young kid, and when I met him and his father at my place, he explained to me that he worked for Troma Entertainment, the makers of The Toxic Avenger and a number of other schlock films, and would I like some DVDs? And I said, sure. And he gave me a stack of Troma DVDs. So actually, he gave me several $100 worth of DVDs. And so really, I came out way ahead. And these machines that had once cost $25,000 and had slowly gone down the line were now reaching their fourth or fifth owner for the princely sum of a single dollar. I've kept cow.net all these years. If you go there, it's primarily a museum to this ISP that never went on to anything else. And it also has a lot of my early attempts at putting up a personal website at a time when everybody did that. I worked really hard on the graphics. All of it is incredibly dated. It might as well have yellowed corners and smell like old books, but it's something I'm proud that I worked on. I did all of this art during my Unix administration era. And while I'm sure I could update it and put all sorts of new things, I mean, certainly my life has changed radically since I put that website up, part of me says that it's just another piece of the internet that represents a time past with pieces of my life now different. And I figure maybe it sits there and it reminds me that every once in a while, it's probably worth it to take one crazy leap into the unknown for a project that's probably doomed, but which you will never, ever forget. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, thanks to James Bakoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Adam Green, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere for supporting me and helping me get out of debt. There's a lot more layers to the cow.net story, perhaps more than other parts of my life. A lot of it, though, really kind of scans as funny technical support answers. I mean, I found out at one point that one of the modems wasn't working, and the fact is people figured out what all of my phone numbers were and then were calling around the dead modem for months without telling me. There was a situation where one of the other roommates to the ISP had a falling out and went a few floors up. And I liked him. His name was John. And we all came to an agreement to keep giving him internet access. And the way that we did this was we ran a Ethernet cable all the way out a window, up two floors, and into his apartment that he was staying at. If you can imagine what this looked like from the outside, it was a bright blue cable stringed from one side of a factory around a corner to another, two floors up. It looked completely weird. And in my heart, I mean, to this day, it is the representative feeling for how completely ad hoc the internet was back then. That kind of mess was everywhere. And the fact that even though John wasn't getting along with his ex-roommates, that we still thought of internet as a basic right and could not be cruel enough to take it away from him. And the way that we did it was so hacked up and weird, but it worked. That, to me, is the pinnacle of what that net, long gone, used to be like.